Hi, everyone. Here I am again. I'm going to be reading another passage from one of my books that Jesus gave me through the process of channeling. And today, that book is the Jesus Trilogy, Chapter 5, The Past, the Future, and Now. People talk about the past and the future as if the past and future actually exist somewhere, as if they're a place you could visit, when they're nothing but ideas, in one case memories, and in the other case fantasies. The past is completely gone, and the future you imagine never arrives. All there is one unfolding, ever-changing moment, which is outside of time. Some have called this the now, and so will I. Time is a construct of the mind that is very useful in your day-to-day life, especially for purposes of communication. But like all mental constructs, people's understanding of time doesn't accurately reflect reality. However, because the brain processes reality in a way that creates a sense of time, you cannot escape the perception of time and everything that comes with that. So I think that I chose this chapter because it makes some very good points about time, because time is actually part of the illusion created by the mind. Our brain, for some reason, perceives life in a way that includes a sense of time, a past, a present, and a future, even though mystics and others have told us that in reality, with a capital R, there is no time. And so we're going to talk about the past and the future because these thoughts about the past and the future that run through our mind are very, very common ones. The egoic mind is full of thoughts. Excuse me. The egoic mind is full of thoughts about the past and the future. And that is those types of thoughts keep us living in a virtual reality. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And so I will just continue here. A number of illusions contribute to making time seem real. One is, as just mentioned, that the past and future feel like they exist somewhere, perhaps over the rainbow. The past and future seem real, solid. And because the past seems real, it often continues to have an impact on the ever-unfolding now. So that's really why we're concerned about these thoughts about the past and the thoughts about the future, is because they have an impact on our present moment experience. They color it. They change it, as does our other thoughts that run through the thought stream. All of the thoughts in the thought stream color our perception of reality and keep us from experiencing the ever-unfolding now very purely and simply. And, of course, the problem with that is that if we're not experiencing the moment, if we're not really here now in our body and senses, but we're lost in virtual reality, then we aren't going to be in touch with our true nature and the wisdom and the guidance that we receive from that for how to live our life. So the past and the future are not so helpful as thoughts as we might think they are. Or they're not as benign, you might say. They are not really benign because they, like all the other thoughts, do change our present moment experience and take us out of the now. If the past didn't seem so real, it would leave no trace and simply be forgotten, like a boat that leaves no wake, no sign of where it's been. But your so-called past does leave a wake. It leaves memories. That is all that remains of the past, but that is something, and something that must be reckoned with. If memories didn't carry an emotional charge and a sensory component and something else much more mysterious that makes your memories personal, your past would feel no different to you than a movie you just watched. You would be able to forget your past as easily as a movie, and there would be no residue to heal or release. But as we all know, these memories are not so simple. These memories of our past have feelings attached to them, and they have a certain charge to them, and they have a sense of me, of this past being mine. But memories have something that movies don't, which makes them personal. They are your movie, your story, not just a story about someone else. The same magic trick of the mind that creates a sense of being the character you are, the character you're playing, also gives this character a past that matters to the character and ideas about a future. The character you're playing not only lives in the now, but also inside a story that includes ideas about the past and future. The character is made real by this sense of a past and future. Without a story about this character that takes place over time, the character would not exist. The character is living a story with a past and future. The me is the star of an ongoing drama with a beginning, a middle, and an end, just like in a movie. If you take away the character's past and future, you wouldn't have a story or much of a character, because the character gains its identity from the storyline. So this is really important. The past and the future help create the character that we believe ourselves to be. And sometimes I've called this the false self, but it's really not a problem that we're this character. We're meant to be a character. We're meant to be this human character. We've been programmed to have certain drives and preferences and desires and a life purpose as this character. So this is the human side of our life. And the humanness of our being, because we are actually the oneness experiencing a human life, but the humanness is able to be created. The experience of humanness, the experience of being a character, is able to be created because we have thoughts about the past and thoughts about the future, which give this character, this in effect, an imaginary character, a story to live out. So, as I said, there's nothing wrong with this story. It's just good to realize that that isn't all that's going on here. You're much more than this character, and at a certain point in your spiritual evolution, it's time to wake up out of the character and realize your true nature. And obviously, all of you who are listening to this are at that point, or you wouldn't be here. This is how it's meant to be. You're meant to live out a story. This story is full of sorrow, struggle, pain, and success and glory too. It's a grand story. Everyone has an amazing tale to tell of failure and triumph, love and hate, loss and new birth. You cry, you laugh, and you experience every possible experience and emotion over your many lifetimes. And yet the character and the story are an illusion. There is no character and there is no story, only the ever-unfolding now, appearing as a character living out a storyline. What an excellent magic trick. That is what an illusion is, isn't it? It's something that appears to be something other than it actually is. You are here living your life, and you are also not who you think you are. You live in two different realities, an illusory one and a real one. You live as the character, and you live as your essence, stripped bare of the costume and the script. This duality that we're living, of both human and divine, is what I wrote a lot about, or I should say Jesus wrote a lot about in my other book, In the World But Not Of It. So there is this duality within us that everyone experiences. There is the sense of being human, and yet there is a sense of something greater that we are also, that is behind this human life. So we are both simultaneously. It's a paradox, and it's difficult to understand, but it is a great mystery, and it makes life very interesting, because there's something much more mysterious going on than just living out a mundane life as a human being. Another quality of the illusion of time is that what happened in the past seems really important. The past seems not only real, but also significant. This is why people share their past with each other, embellishing and fleshing out each detail for all to hear. But all they are really sharing is their particular story about the past, because the past itself can never be shared, since it is gone. All you have are memories of the past, the residue, a shadow of something that happened. And I want to add here that, of course, what we share with people is not a pure, unadulterated memory of the event, but it is actually story. It is actually a story that we have created, or that we continue to carry with us, about the past is what we share. And that even can change any pure memory that we have of it. So our memories are not even really true memories. They're a spin on the past that we've put on the past over time. And that spin even changes and evolves over time as we recreate that memory, or we change and re-spin that memory over time. So our memories are interesting creatures. That's all that is left, and that isn't much. Memories are not at all like an experience, and they do a poor job of representing an experience. All that memories are is someone's version of something that happened in the past, a story. All you have of the past is your story about it. The memories people most cherish and dwell on are either their painful ones, in which they felt victimized, unhappy, or unsuccessful, or their happy ones, which make them feel sad because whatever made them happy is no longer happening. Such are the memories people lug around, which pass for the past. The unfortunate thing is that by dwelling on their painful stories, people wound themselves again and again. This is ironic, because when people talk about the past, it's often with an intent of healing the past, or fixing the past, or resolving the past. But often, in the way that we speak about the past, it doesn't resolve the past, but just continues the same painful memories, just reinforces the pain, or creates more pain. So we're not very skillful at dealing with our memories of the past. We're not very conscious about what we're doing with them. We think that they're valuable and they should be shared, and that sharing them is somehow going to fix them, or thinking about them is somehow going to fix or resolve them. But more often than not, thinking about them or sharing them just makes them last, makes them continue. And if it's a painful memory, then that pain just continues, or it perhaps is even strengthened by other people's agreement with it. If memories are mostly painful, what motivates people to focus on them and share them? The answer is that stories give the character a sense of existing and definition. I am someone who lost my mother at 8. I'm someone who went into the military. I'm someone who had four children. Your stories tell you and others who you are, that is, who you think you are. They give the real self, which would otherwise be unclothed, some clothing. They turn the real you, which is nameless and shapeless, into somebody. Stories are important to the ego, which drives the character, because stories create the character. Whenever you talk about yourself, you can feel the push of the ego behind the sentences that begin with I. To maintain the existence of the character, the ego needs to talk about itself. This is why people share their stories with others, and this is why, in their quiet moments, people think about their past. It seems important to do, and everyone else seems to agree and to be doing the same thing. What kind of a person would you be if you didn't care about your past or other people's past? Much happier. If the past didn't seem so important, the past would be easier to forget and not so hard to heal from. These two qualities, realness and importance, give the past a dimensionality, an intensity, and a power that it does not deserve. The past seems like much more than just a thought, a memory, even though that is all it is. It seems like more than a thought because the past is embedded not only in your mind, but also in your body. You carry your memories with you wherever you go, like belongings that you cling to, as if they were so precious, especially the painful memories. Those are even more dear to your heart than the happy memories. You hold your memories as treasures, and this is also part of your programming. This sense of preciousness ensures that the stories will keep being retold, which contributes so importantly to the illusion of time. So you see, you are programmed to suffer. It can hardly be avoided until you begin to see through the illusion cast by your programming. The seeming importance of what happened in the past drives the character's drama forward. The past, or really the character's stories about it, causes the character to do things he or she would not do if the past didn't seem so real and important, and if the stories didn't seem so true. The past, and in particular, the stories about the past, give the character identity and a raison d'être, a reason to do what the character does. The character is shaped by what happened in the past and the conclusions drawn about what happened. Those conclusions influence the character's present and, consequently, the character's future. The character's stories about the past determine the character's destiny, along with the character's beliefs. The past and the stories related to it are imprinting, just as beliefs are imprinting. If you don't see the effect that your stories about the past are having on your current behavior, you can't be free of that behavior, just as you can't be free of the effects of your beliefs until you realize their effects. Overcoming the power of the past and the power of your stories to determine your present and your future is largely a matter of seeing that the past is not real and not important, and that it is completely gone. It is also a matter of realizing that any stories you tell about the past are incomplete and therefore false. For most, the past shadows them, shaping how they relate to others, how they feel and behave, how they see themselves, and what they envision as possible and not possible for themselves. They are controlled by a shadow, by something that isn't real. So the important point here is that these stories that represent our past are incomplete. They are usually sad stories. They are usually stories told from the perspective of the ego, and not from the perspective of the true self. If the perspective of the true self were included, then the story would be much more positive. It would paint a truer, more positive picture. But because these stories are developed by the ego, they are limited and fear-based stories and limiting stories. So in order to heal the conclusions, the stories that we came to tell ourselves about the past, in order to heal them, we have to bring the whole truth to them. We have to learn to see what happened to us from the perspective of our true self. And that is what will heal the past. And then that story, that painful story, won't keep coming up again, because we will have reprogrammed that in our unconscious. So this is what healers do who work with past life regression and other techniques. They find a way to tell a truer, bigger, more positive story about the past, and then that is the story that the person concludes in place of the previous story that caused pain. What happened in the past is responsible for many of your beliefs. So freeing yourself from those beliefs requires seeing the truth about the past. The truth I'm referring to is not the truth about what happened, although that can sometimes be valuable, but more valuable than that is realizing that the past is not important. And then I will also add, also realizing that the conclusion you came to about the past wasn't true, because it wasn't the whole story. What happened in the past might have been important then to that now, but it is not important to this moment unless you make it so. I love that sentence, so I'm just going to repeat it because it really struck me when I wrote it. What happened in the past might have been important then to that now, but it's not important to this moment unless you make it so. So this is where the illusion comes in. We think our past is important to this moment, and that's the mistake we made. What happened was important to the previous now, to the past, but it is not at all important to this moment. This is a fresh new moment. You make the past important by believing it's important and by keeping it alive through stories. Believing that the past is important becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. When you believe that, you hold on to your memories and stories about the past, and those stories create feelings. Then that inner climate shapes your behavior and determines how you experience reality and how reality responds to you. In that way, you fulfill the prophecy that the past is important. The past can only become important if you allow it to. So the past bleeds into the future because it creates feelings in your body, which is a present moment experience. And that changes your experience of the present moment. If you let go of the past, you won't miss it. Memories and stories of the past do little for you or for your life except keep you living out the character's programming. Letting go of the past is not as hard as it may sound because the past is already gone. How can you let go of something that's gone? All you have to let go of are your thoughts and stories about the past, which have rarely served you anyway. So that's a key point too. Because our programming doesn't seem to allow us to make this distinction very easily, that our past, letting go of the past, is actually only letting go of our stories about the past. The past is already gone. There's nothing more to let go of. Most of your thoughts and stories about the past fortify the false self, and you don't need that. You can still play the character you're meant to play, but without your programming determining the script. Instead of following your programming, you learn to improvise. In place of the script is the flow, the ever-unfolding now. You learn to do and say what comes out of the flow to do and say. So this is the alternative to attending to our thoughts about the past and our thoughts about the future. The human character will still play out its life, but in the now. And that character will then be guided by the wisdom of the true self that comes out of the now. Excuse me. That character will then be guided by the wisdom that comes out of the now instead of being guided by the egoic mind, the ego. So that's the shift that happens. The character is still there. You're still the woman or the man or the scientist or the spiritual teacher or whatever it is that you would describe yourself by. You're still that character, of course. You don't need your thoughts about the past to live your life as a human being. It's just that you will live your life as a human being much more effectively because that human being will be guided by the inner wisdom of the true self instead of the ego, the thought stream. You don't need the past sorrows and pains to be affecting your present moment experience and guiding you to take certain actions, because that ultimately is what happens, is the past causes you to take certain actions. Your stories about the past cause you to be a certain way in the world, to take certain actions, to feel a certain way, and you don't need that. That's just painful programming. And the character can't be as effective or happy when it's being run by that. Your memories, just like your beliefs, create an internal climate that determines your present moment experience. Running those memories in your mind is like running a sad movie in the background while you go about living your life. How can that be helpful? Even a happy memory running in the background only keeps you from fully experiencing the now. A happy memory can never fulfill you or be as rich in experience as the present moment is when you give the present moment your full attention. In reality, there is nothing but this fresh, new moment. What will you do with it? Can you approach it anew like a baby? Can you approach the people in your life as if for the first time? Can you experience the clean, clear, empty, unbaggaged self that you really are? To the ego, your real self is not as juicy or exciting as the character, with all the character's emotions and drama. The ego wants nothing to do with reality or the real self. In each new moment, the ego attempts to pull you back into your thoughts, back into the character and its story. If you perceive your true self through the ego's eyes, you won't be interested in the peace and love that your true self has to offer, and you won't even realize what it has to offer. You won't get to know the real you. You won't know the shining reality that exists, in which you exist. But it is here, waiting for you to discover it. The future is as unreal as the past. But it's easier to see this about the future than the past. Unlike memories, no one shares their detailed fantasies of the future with others as if they believe those fantasies are real. Nevertheless, most people spend a good deal of their time imagining the future, and they hold these ideas dear as if they were real. people's dreams are important enough to them that they feel angry if their dreams are challenged and hurt if their dreams aren't also believed in and supported by those they love. Many a relationship has ended because the two people involved did not share and back each other's dreams. There's nothing wrong with having hopes and dreams, but it is good to also be aware that you made those dreams up and that you don't actually know what will be, and to realize that you don't have much control over what will be. The ego doesn't want to admit how little control it has over the future, and it pretends to have much more control than it does. The ego has a strange relationship with the future. It both fears the worst and imagines the best. There is no middle ground with the ego, only black and white. Horrors and dreams come true. To the ego, the future will either be terrible or wonderful. You will be either a bag lady or a millionaire. This is a funny thing to see. And I thought this was a funny point when I wrote it. It's true, isn't it? Our minds go into worst case scenarios and into idealized fantasies, but we don't fantasize about what life is really like because it really isn't worst case scenarios and ideal fantasies. Life, for the most part, almost every moment of it, is somewhere in between. And it certainly is always a mixed bag. It's never super wonderful and perfect in every regard, nor is it completely terrible and horrible in every regard. The truth is, life is a mixed bag, but our mind just doesn't see it that way. Our mind loves the drama and the feelings and the emotion and the story of fearful things and wonderful things happening. The gigantic ups and downs is what it feeds on. Just as memories from the past are programmed to feel real, important, and precious, so are fantasies of the future. One of the ways that fantasies are made to seem real and therefore believable is that they have you in them. It is your future. You imagine yourself in your dream house, driving your dream car, being with your dream partner. This may sound obvious, but an imagination is greatly empowered when you are part of it. Just as your memories have you at the center, so do your fantasies of the future. This makes your fantasies, like your memories, seem real, important, and precious. And I might add, true. This explains why people don't like their dreams dashed by others or by events. Your dreams are very personal. You are identified with your dreams. Your dreams are you. Who would you be without them and without your past? Exactly. That's the point. Your future and your past together create the you that you think you are. Having your dreams threatened feels like a threat to you. And so it is, a threat to your idea of you. Only in the illusory reality can someone else's ideas about your idea of your future threaten the idea of you. What a tangled web the illusory reality weaves. Another way imaginations of the future are made real and believable is that they have elements in them that are already part of your reality. For instance, in your fantasy, you might still live in the same town you're in, but in a more expensive neighborhood. Or you imagine that you are with the same partner, but you're traveling the world. Or you imagine that you're driving your same friends around in your new luxury car. You don't imagine yourself in some place like Oz, where everything is unfamiliar. That would be too strange, too impossible. You would know for sure that that was a fantasy, an illusion. But if your fantasy has similar elements, that makes it believable and seemingly possible. So that's the trick. That's what makes our fantasies believable, even though nobody's life has ever turned into a fantasy they've had of it. It's impossible for that to happen. There might be certain elements that resemble a fantasy, but you can't possibly imagine your future. It's impossible. It's not in our capability as human beings to do that. But the ego doesn't want to admit that. It likes to believe that its desires and dreams can be reality. And it suffers over the fact that they can't. It's angry over the fact that it can't. This is where a great deal of suffering comes from. Perhaps what most lends realness to fantasy is the fact that you want it to be real. I want it to be this way, therefore it will be. People are programmed to believe that their desires will come true. In the end, you believe you will finally get what you want. That is the happy ending everyone longs for. That is the basic fantasy. You get what you want. End of story. But in reality, there is no end of story, except perhaps a death, and that is hardly the fairy tale ending people are looking for. When does your happy ending arrive? When your first child is born? Then he gets sick and has to go to the hospital. So is the happy ending when he gets better and comes home? Then he grows up and is unhappy. What if that doesn't change? Where's your happy ending? Meanwhile, all the other ups and downs are happening in your career, in your marriage, in your health, in your friendships, in your finances. Life is not a fairy tale. It is also not a nightmare. It is both to the ego, but neither to your real self, which is enjoying the wild roller coaster ride called life. The ego's idea of life and reality just doesn't fit reality, and that can only cause suffering. The ego wants a happy ending or a lot of moments that feel like a happy ending. But the ego doesn't ever get the life it wants because that would be impossible. Life is not something you order up from a menu. It doesn't comply with your wishes and commands. Because the ego has impossible expectations, disappointment is an ongoing experience in the egoic state of consciousness. The character is constantly disappointed by life, even by very simple day-to-day experiences. Your husband brings home the wrong kind of ice cream. You break one of your favorite bowls. Your daughter gets a bad report card. Every event in life is an opportunity for the ego to be disappointed as it compares real life to its fantasy of how life could or should be. That is the problem with fantasy and future expectations. Life doesn't live up to them, so they cause disappointment with life. When life is perfectly fine as it is, life is unfolding exactly as it is meant to. To define this unfolding as wrong or not good enough is to tell a story about life that is simply untrue. And untrue stories, as we have seen, only make you unhappy. Because of how you're programmed to relate to both your memories and your fantasies, you're bound to suffer. The deck is stacked against you as long as you remain in the ego's illusory world. It is a world of pain and suffering, which creates more of the same. So how do you break out of the ego's illusory world? An illusion only needs to be seen through before it ceases to be an illusion. But the illusory reality, because it shows up in so many ways in every moment, has to be seen through again and again. Your life must become a practice of seeing through the illusion to the truth in each moment, until that practice becomes automatic and no longer needed. There is no more worthwhile endeavor than seeing through the illusion, but the will to awaken from the illusory reality has to be strong enough to take on this practice. That will comes from the Father when the time is ready in terms of your evolution. Reading this may mean you are ready. If not, then reading this is certainly making you ready. You cannot read this and not be changed by it, because once you see the truth, you cannot not see it. The bell cannot be unrung. Your interest in awakening has brought you this far, whether you even realize what awakening is or why you're reading this. There is no more important practice than meditation for breaking the domination of the ego and its instrument, the voice in your head. Meditation is the key to learning to live in reality rather than in the illusory reality created by your thoughts and feelings. The reason that meditation is the key is that it teaches you to be present, to pay attention to reality rather than lost in your thoughts and feelings, which create and uphold the illusory reality. Meditation brings you into the present moment, the now. It gives you a taste of another possible way of being and living as a human. It gives you a taste of your essential self, your true nature. Once you've had enough tastes of reality to trust it, you won't want to return to your illusory reality, and you won't be able to, because you are no longer ignorant of the truth. So here it is. Here's the truth. There is no past. There is no future. There is only the ever-unfolding now. Whatever you call the past is the step you're in the midst of taking. And whatever you call the future is also the step you're in the midst of taking. The past and future are contained in the step you are taking now. The past and future do not reach beyond this one step, except in your imagination. All you are ever doing is taking one step. But the experience of that step is always fresh and new, because it is as if that step is taking place in a moving river, which brings to you all manner of experience. This river is the flow of life. Life comes to you, and you receive it, experience it, and respond to it. This is the experience of being in the now. It is effortless, enjoyable, interesting, and wondrous. You feel as if you are moving through life, but it is more like life is moving through you and moving you. In this way, the water of life nourishes and sustains all life. When you are outside the flow of life, in the desert that is the ego's reality, it feels like you have to struggle just to survive. It doesn't feel like life comes to you, but like you have to make life happen through your own efforts. When you're outside the flow, the illusion is that you're pitted against life, while the flow is an experience of being beloved and held by life. In the flow, you experience life's bounty and grace, not the ego's limitation and fear. The now is the experience of being held and supported by life, which is the truth. You are being held and supported by life. You are not separate from the life force that sustains you. You are this very life force. It flows through you and moves you to act and speak whenever your speech and actions are not being co-opted by the ego. You only feel separate, but that is the illusion. How you feel does not reflect the truth about reality. Reality is bounteous, trustworthy, and intelligent beyond imagination. So this is the end of this particular chapter, And I see I still have quite a bit more time left. So let's see how I will fill it. This is what you call playing it by ear, right? Okay, how about I just open this book somewhere? Should we give it over to God like that? Okay, whoops. I opened it to the chapter I read last week. That's not going to work. So much for the perfection, knowing exactly what to read. I will say something more about this chapter, about the past and the future. There was a lot of repetition in the words in this chapter. And there is a lot of repetition in all of the teachings that I've brought through. In fact, I keep writing one book after another, so you know, how can each book be completely different? It can't. I'm always repeating the truth in different ways. But the point I want to make is that people really need to hear the truth over and over and over again in different ways, but even in the same way. Because moment to moment, we're being told within our own minds a lie. And that programming to listen and believe to the misperceptions of the ego, that programming is so great, is so strong, that it's not broken overnight. We chip away at it. Every time we give our attention to the truth, or every time we read about the truth, or listen to the truth, we are chipping away at that programming that holds the illusion in place. And this is a slow process for everyone, I think. Certainly it has been for me. It doesn't happen overnight that we're suddenly free of our programming. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah, that's a fantasy. Life is challenging. And it's challenging because we have programming that is challenging, that is persistent about holding the illusion in place. And it does it so skillfully. That's why this life deserves our compassion. It is hard to be human. It's hard to see through the programming, even when you've been taught about the programming. It's hard not to get caught up in it. So it's quite a lengthy process of getting free. First, you discover intellectually, you learn about the truth, but that certainly isn't enough to completely free you, as you well know. There's much more that has to happen within you. There's a deep process going on that's even under your awareness that you aren't in control of, that the divine is in control of. And it's carrying you along towards greater freedom and peace and love with your cooperation, hopefully, or even without your cooperation, it will eventually take you there. But this is a deep and mysterious process, one that we aren't really able to put into words, to understand, to know, to evaluate, certainly not from the mind. We can't evaluate our progress very well, but we must trust that progress is always happening as long as the willingness is there, the sincerity is there to awaken. We will progress because that is our part in it. Our part is to be sincere, to say yes. I don't know how to do this exactly. I am really still caught up in my thoughts at times. I fail miserably at not identifying with my ego at times. I need help. Please help. I'm doing my best. That is all you can do, is have compassion for how difficult it is and do your best in this process and invite the spiritual forces that are working in your behalf for your evolution to speed you along, to help show you what you need to speed you along. And they will bring you books, they will bring you teachers, they will bring you insights, they will increase the will to awaken. And that will gets to a point of being very, very strong in people, to the point where that is the most important thing. If your will has developed to the point where the most important thing is to be free of the illusion in order that you can live from love and peace, then that's important, that's meaningful. That is a very good sign. You are probably quite close to awakening. But the motivation has to be pure in a way. It has to not just be, I can't stand this anymore, I can't stand suffering anymore, I want to get away from this suffering. That is a stage of willingness and a stage of awakening. But I think there is a deeper desire that also has to be activated within you, which is a desire for goodness, for love, for peace, for service, to be an instrument, to awaken for the good of all, not just for yourself. Because awakening isn't about yourself. Awakening happens because that is your role in the whole, to awaken. Because the whole has a role for you. And it may not have anything to do with spiritual teachings. You may not become a spiritual teacher. Not everyone who awakens becomes a spiritual teacher or writes about these things. Many, many more people simply impact those around them with their consciousness, with their love, with their compassion, because the vibration that you resonate at matters in this world. That alone, without even saying anything, can change lives, can change the environment around you. And certainly, that's what this world needs. So, at whatever level of awakening you're at, however many moments you spend in presence, is of value and a great boon to the whole. So it isn't even necessary for you to have this thing called awakening happen. And that's not up to you anyway. But what is up to you, moment to moment, is you can choose to give your attention to the present moment. You can choose to turn your attention away from the thought stream and from involvement with ideas about the past and the future and beliefs and opinions and sad stories and even happy stories. You don't need those. In every moment that choice is available to you, you are all advanced enough to know that, to have that choice. Many people aren't. They don't have a choice yet. Their conditioning is running them. They haven't run into the truth. They don't know the truth. They don't know the way out yet. But you do. This is what the books I'm writing are about, the books that many people are writing about. How do you awaken from the illusion? Once you know the truth, then it's up to you to practice it. And you practice it in each moment. You have to choose again. choose the now. Choose being present in your body and senses, here and now, not lost in the virtual reality of your stories. You have to choose that over and over again until it's so automatic that you don't experience that there is even a choice. And when that's the case, you are living in the now and you are doing thy will. And that is the motivation for awakening, is to do thy will, to be an instrument for thy will. And the best and most efficient way to speed along this process, this natural process that's already happening within each and every one of you listening to this, is to meditate. And I mean to meditate seriously every day, to make that a priority, to put that at the top of your to-do list. Meditate an hour a day if you can. At least try to do it that long. In one sitting, meditate 1 hour a day. It will change your life. I found that this is so important that I created an online course to help people, to support people in establishing a practice of meditation. And if you want to find out about that online course, which is called the Radical Happiness Course, you can do so by just going to my website, radicalhappiness.com, and going to the Courses tab, and there it is. So it takes a commitment, and the course is designed to help you make that commitment. 8 weeks of making that commitment will change your relationship to meditation. You will want to meditate because you will have experienced the benefits of that. So once you get going in that direction, there's no stopping it. So that is what you can do. You can make that choice. Besides choosing moment to moment to be in the moment, choose to meditate every day. And then that moment to moment choice will not be so difficult. It's really difficult to choose to be in the moment without having had a practice of meditation. It's like putting the cart before the horse to try to be present without meditating. So there you have it. Another hour gone by, and thank you so much for having me. And I will look forward to speaking with you again next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.